Welcome to the Cinebros Podcast. You all may have noticed, but for the first time last week, we missed an episode of the show. It did not come out on its normally scheduled release date on Friday. And Luke, you want to tell us why that was?
Sure. So someone that I care about in my family was having some health issues, but they had some tests ran and everything's fine. They're doing awesome, living life. So everything's going good. Had like a minor scare, but, and it caused us to miss an episode, but it's okay.
All right. And we are back this week and me and Luke are going to be debating. Luke, what are we going to be debating?
Everybody, we are going to be debating The Lodge, a horror movie that came out February of 2020. So, of course, that was a horrible time for movies to come out because a month later, everything shut down. But it's a movie that I really love and I feel like has been overlooked by a lot of people. Tyler has some different opinions about the movie.
I hate it. Just straight up, I hate it. Straight up,
that's his different opinion.
There it is. Debate over. That is the debate.
And I'm here too.
I was just about to introduce Ray. Ray is moderating. Yeah.
Yep. Ray's back. Hello.
All right. Ray, would you like to take us into the debate?
Yes. I mean, if everyone knows the show by now, we'll open up the debate with an open argument. Then we'll go into round one, which will be our writing round. Then we'll transition into round two, which will be our directing round. Then we'll go to round three, which will be the acting, and then we'll end it with a closing. Gentlemen, who would like to begin?
Luke, I'll let you start first.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of wanted to go first. So, The Lodge, like I said, came out at a pretty bad time for any movies, not just horror movies. And not a lot of people saw it, didn't make a whole lot of money at the box office. It's had a little bit of a resurgence lately. It's on Hulu, if anybody wants to go watch it, which I obviously highly recommend you do. But to me, this movie, if you're a fan of Ari Aster style, of course, if you don't recognize that name, he directed Hereditary and Midsommar, which I don't really care for Hereditary a ton, but it is impressively made. And I love Midsommar. It's my favorite horror film, actually. And he's a very exciting new young voice in horror. And this movie was not directed by him, but you see his influence all over the movie. And I'm sure Tyler at some point will say it's ripping off Ari Aster, but I don't think so at all. I think it emulates his style really well. This movie is an example in claustrophobic tension building. And that's all it is. It is a slow burn horror type thriller. And its thrills don't come by any outright scares. You know, it's not a traditional horror movie. And if you go into it thinking that, then, you know, you're going to be disappointed. But if you go into it expecting a slow burn movie that takes its time setting up this just creepy, dark, claustrophobic atmosphere that almost felt hard to breathe while watching it. And I know that sounds like an exaggeration, but this movie does such a good job in setting the stage for us for what's going on. It's also extremely well acted. Riley Keough, all kinds of other people, Jaden Martell, one of the actors from It. All the acting in this movie is great. Of course, we'll talk about that later on. I really love that this isn't a character study, so you don't know a ton about the characters. Obviously, some important pieces of their backstory are given. But for the most part, this movie is an exercise in tension, an exercise in trying to just make you feel eerie and get under your skin. And honestly, it uses that to entertain you for about 90 minutes, and I think it's an awesome watch. Highly recommend it. The camera work in this movie, some of the best I've ever seen in a film. I'll just be honest with you. But of course, I'm going to save all of that for the next coming rounds. So that is my opening argument.
All right. Well,
all right. Tyler, are you ready?
I am indeed. Okay. So Ray, you ever have a movie where you see its trailer and like it just makes you really, really excited to watch it?
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened to me with this movie. I first saw the trailer for The Lodge back in fall of 2019 and really fell in love with the movie and really wanted to watch it. It really nailed the suspensefulness and the horror aspects of this movie. And in the trailer, it actually compared itself to The Shining which, as any horror fan will know, is a very, very high bar to set when you're comparing your movie to arguably the greatest horror movie ever made. Well, after I watched the trailer, I just forgot about it until probably March or so, whenever it went on Hulu. And I got a text from Luke, and he's like, "Hey, man, just watch this movie. You need to watch it. It's called The Lodge. It's really good." And I got excited. I was like, "Oh, yeah, I remember this movie. I completely forgot about it." So I watched it that night, and I was just so disappointed. It could have been so much more than what it was. I came in with such high expectations, and it started off really, really well. The first 15 minutes of this movie are the best part of the movie, and I'll talk about more about that later. But at the start, I was thinking, like, this is going to be really good, I can tell. It is very obviously inspired by the work of Ari Aster, who it's well documented on the show that both me and Luke are really big fans of. And in the first 50 minutes, they're really nailing his style of horror. But again, as it goes on, it just gets worse and worse. And at the end, it leaves me feeling like it could have been so much more than what it ended up being. And I will leave that for my opening argument.
Alrighty. That wraps up the opening argument round. We're going to head into round one now, the writing round. Tyler, you will be starting this one, even though you just ended the last one, because Luke started last round.
All right, so the writing was by far my biggest problem with the movie. And I'll start from the very beginning in telling you my problems with it, because the beginning of the movie starts off very strong. You know, this is very inspired by Ari Aster, and the camera work at the very beginning sets everything up nicely. The beginning is very well acted and very well written. So for those that don't know anything about this movie, it follows two kids who are forced to spend Christmas up in the mountains at their cabin with this woman who is their soon-to-be stepmother. And the beginning of this movie focuses on these kids' biological mother as she discovers that her husband has been cheating on her. So the first 15 minutes really, really establishes the sense of this is a horror movie, and this is the tone that we're going to try to go for, as this woman's mental sanity just degrades and degrades further the more she finds out and the more she tries to deal with it. Until, spoiler alert, she picks up a gun and shoots and kills herself. And that scene, my jaw just really dropped at how well acted and well written the buildup to it was. And it was Alicia Silverstone plays the mom, and she's only in the movie for the first 15 minutes, and I think she gave the best performance and had some of the best written characters. So once that happens, there are a few other scenes that are really good after that, you know, as the kids kind of deal with the grief. And I want to highlight one scene in particular where the daughter, and I should mention that this family has a real sense of like religious sauce, like they're very religious. And there's a scene where the daughter, who I want to say is probably like 8 or 9. Would you say that's right, Luke?
Yeah.
Around there?
Yeah, 8 or 9 sounds right.
And she is crying on her dad, and she's just screaming like, "Mom killed herself, mom killed herself, she won't go to heaven." And the dad is trying his best to console her, but the daughter is just so broken. And that the writing in that scene was so good. It really just pulled on your heartstrings. But past that, we begin to start experiencing my biggest problem with this movie. And that problem is that this is a movie of moments and not as a whole. This movie as a whole, I think, is not very good at all. But it has individual moments that are spectacular. And the biggest failure of this movie is that it does not capitalize on the such strong moments that it has. There are certain points in the movie where, like, it really starts to begin getting a sense of tension going on, and you're starting to get maybe a little scared. You're starting to wonder, like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen next. Like, what's going on? Things are starting to get real here. But every time that starts to happen, the movie just breaks your immersion with a scene that just doesn't continue on with what was being built on. So a big moment, a big part of this is the history, at least to me, the history of the main woman who was raised in a Christian cult, and she was the only survivor after they all committed suicide and mass suicide for their cult. Well, the kids in the movie figure that out, and they begin exploiting that to their advantage with this woman. So again, this is very big spoilers for this movie, but who cares? You know, you watch the show. These kids hatch up this brilliant plan to just torment this poor woman who in the entire movie is just really nice and, you know, trying to do her best. She realizes it's a tough situation going into. And these kids are at the heart of everything that goes wrong in the movie. So, which I personally felt was a major, major missed opportunity for the movie. So I'm skipping ahead a lot here, but once the movie gets into gear and the kids and the new stepmom are at the cabin, and there's obviously some tension there. The writing does build up that kind of well, with the tension developing between the mom and the two kids. Well, one day they wake up and everything is missing in the cabin. And that kind of starts in the whole mystery of, like, hey, what's going on? What's going on? And the mom, like, calls the kids out on it. She's like, where's my stuff? Where's my stuff? And the kids are like, well, we didn't do this. We didn't do this. So, boom, there's a mystery that has been created. And the movie then proceeds to do nothing with that mystery and takes you in a whole different direction. And so tension is just released. It doesn't focus on the tension. You begin to experience the mom's degradation as she begins to experience visions and hallucinations of her religious past, and the kids exploiting that themselves. And, you know, there's one scene where, like, the boy hangs himself, and she comes across that and is freaking out, obviously, because the boy doesn't die. And the kid's whole central thing is they're trying to convince this woman that they're dead and in purgatory. Just very much trying to play with this woman's mental state. And the reason I'm setting all this up, even though it may sound like I don't have a point right now, is because I have never hated two characters more in a horror movie than I hated the kids in this movie. They were written so unrealistically. They were so evil without reason that it just makes no sense. And the movie as a whole suffers for it. So their whole motive is that this woman, in their mind, killed their mom. And obviously that's not entirely her fault, but they think it is. And numerous times in the movie, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, all the stuff vanishing in the house, that's kind of funny. But, like, you got to reveal the joke at some point, especially when, you know, you find out that they have stolen her medicine and hid it away. And she has a dog that is like her therapy dog that she bought, like, to help her cope with all of her, like, mental shortcomings. They leave the door open and the dog escapes. But still, the kids say nothing. And then more and more, they try to convince her that they're dead, and then the son hangs himself, and so she's freaking out and everything, right? And eventually it comes to a point where, like, her sanity is so broken that any sane person should be able to tell that they need to, like, reveal what is going on. And these kids just don't. And it really, really broke my immersion with this movie, because I was like, these kids are idiots. Like, this is obviously apparent. They should be telling this woman what is going on, because they are creating an unsafe environment for everybody. and it just doesn't happen. Like, the movie is so unrealistic in its writing that it really just hurts to watch. And at the end, she completely has a mental breakdown, and it implies that she kills the kids at the end, and I rejoiced. You know, normally you're supposed to, you know, feel bad when, like, the characters die in a horror movie. No, I did not. I was glad to see them go because of the writing here. And the it really just upsets me because this movie has so much potential, and I'll get more into that in the next round. But the writing really killed it with its unrealistic characters. It just not carrying out the tension that should have been able to be, like, built upon. It just didn't do that. I felt like there were some scenes that just didn't need to be there, and that served nothing to the story. And overall, this writing is just not good. It's not even an average. I think it's just not, it's not well written at all. And that is my argument.
All right, Tyler. Very interesting approach. But we're going to hear Luke's argument now. Luke, whenever you're ready.
Okay, so as you all would probably expect, I have a ton of problems with most of what Tyler just said. So, something we both agree on, the opening 15 minutes, fantastic. The way that everything is set up, and there's a little bit of exposition between the mother and the father about what's happening, but for the most part, it's basically meant to gut punch you, and I didn't see the gut punch coming. And it's just, you know, minimal dialogue, kind of setting the scene, and it's the most, not just bright, like, thematically, but the most, you know, it's not bright thematically, but like, it's in a bright setting, like, it's sunny out, and, you know, it's during the daytime, and then that opening scene happens with that gut punch, and then it just goes straight into the rest of the movie just being cold and dark and miserable, even before they get to the cabin. So that's not just because something horrible happened to the characters, so the tone of this movie switched, but I love how the aesthetic of the film switches once the mother commits suicide. I think it's really masterfully done, and that's something me and Tyler agree on. And I think that's one of the only things we agree on here with this movie, with the writing, because here's my thing with the kids. I'm just going to go right into it. Obviously, what the kids did was horrible. And what I'm about to say, even though you might not believe me, is not me trying to excuse what the kids did, but I want you to kind of understand from their perspective. To them, and it's not right at all. And the son is mainly at fault. The daughter is almost too young to fully understand what's happening, and I think she's manipulated by the son a little bit, but even him. So you have to look at it from their perspective, right? To them, this woman is the reason their mother is dead and that their life sucks at the moment. And obviously, this is horrible what is happening. It's a terrible situation. I'd argue that my least favorite character in the movie is the father, because first off, he's a novelist. Why on earth would you date somebody that you learn about from research from your novel, who is obviously has some mental instability and is on medicine, and bring them around your kids, and they get to this cabin out in the middle of nowhere, and one day he's just like, okay, I'm going to roll out and do some work stuff. That was very convenient just for the plot, and I really hated his character a lot. So I would argue that he is the villain of the movie just for putting everybody in this horrible situation, not the kids. So to them, this woman is the reason their mom is dead. And I know that what they're doing is horrible. You know, this isn't justifying what they're doing. It's just kind of trying to allow you to understand it, right? You could see them as the villains of the movie, but they're sympathetic villains whose motivations are clear.
Nah, screw those kids.
No, listen, Tyler. Okay. And the thing with the dog, once the dog gets out is when they finally realize they went too far. And I think that's a really, you know, and especially the daughter has like this scene where she's just standing there breaking down, realizing what she had done to this woman. And of course, the woman's too far gone to really understand. She's just sitting there cradling her dog that's dead, which, side note real quick, screw any movie that kills an animal. Why are animals even in movies, especially cute little dogs? Because they always die. I hate that. But anyway, side note, I'm an animal lover. So anyway, but yeah, so I love the fact that this movie is a crescendo to the last 15 minutes. The entire movie is a buildup to chaos at the end of the movie. That's the entire point of the movie. Now, some people might not like that. Tyler said that this is a movie of moments, and I'd agree with that, but I don't think that's a detriment to the movie. I think that these moments are there to just kind of, you know, nothing is outright explained to you really until the twist happens, and then you kind of see where stuff goes from there. For the most part, it's all just like a collection of scenes in the house with this woman where her mental state is just breaking down because of what these kids are doing to her. And obviously later it gets a little not that subtle because he tries to hang himself and he's wearing a harness, and Tyler talked about that. But there are a lot of scenes that are just expertly done here where it shows that, you know, something isn't right. So she's being she's basically being tortured already by these kids. It's just not out in your face, right? So my favorite scene in the movie, and it's an example of these moments that Tyler was talking about where it's hinted at, and you know, you're kind of not really figuring out what's going on, but you're seeing signs that this woman is just being tortured by somebody. You don't know if it's members from the cult, because there's a scene later on where she hears like some sounds of the reverend of that cult she was in playing on a radio that the kids had set up, of course. But she kind of thinks, so for a while you think, did the cult or is the cult infiltrating this house? You don't know who it is. And I love these little tiny scenes where it's just kind of furthering you into this world, right? It's just kind of making you more uneasy, and it's almost confusing you more as it's going along. And I know that doesn't sound like a positive, but I think it is, because the whole time you're like, what is happening, right? So my favorite scene in the whole movie, not even kidding, and it's not a scary scene, but it's one of these scenes where you can kind of figure that, where, you know, where it's kind of hinted at that these kids are trying to mess with her, right? Or someone is messing with her. Everything is going against her, right? So she's talking, she's sitting there, she's miserable. The kids obviously don't want anything to do with her, and she's a good person. So she feels bad about the kids not liking her, and she's trying her best. So she's just sitting in the house miserable, right? So the daughter comes up to her and she says, do you want to see a gift that I was making for my mom before she passed away? And she seems excited to show her. And the woman is like, oh my gosh, you know, she's finally opening up to me. This is awesome. She gets really excited. You kind of see it. So what unfolds after this is very sad and unfortunate when it's this DVD and they watch it, and it's a home video of the kids being really happy with their old mom. And it becomes apparent that the daughter just showed her this in order to basically tell this woman that she's not wanted here. Basically, she shows her this. She reels her in with her, you know, seeming like she's being kind and wanting to show this part of her life with her. And then, of course, you watch the movie and it's basically saying, yeah, look how happy we were with our mom. You're not our mom. You suck. And it's basically, and it's just such a gut punch to this woman. And the whole movie is just her sanity slowly slipping away because all kinds of little things are happening to her. Obviously, Tyler said that she was in a cult and when she was younger, and the family's very religious. And the kids, you find out it's the kids, but for a long time you don't. The kids thing is near the end of the movie. So for a while, you don't know what's happening. You just know that this woman is being preyed upon by somebody who's trying to basically make her go insane. And there's crucifixes up around the house. And, you know, any room that the woman walks in, she's, you know, unsettled by this because she was in a cult, doesn't want anything to do with religion. So she tries to take him down, and then she re-enters the rooms later and they're all up again. All this religious imagery. And it's just so sad. And I just love how that's basically what this movie is. It's moments and moments and moments compiled together that don't explain much at all, but they just kind of make you realize that something's not right. And it's all slow burn. It's a slow burn mystery horror movie. And if you're not into that, then that's cool. You know, a lot of people aren't. This was probably marketed as, and Tyler mentions the marketing, which I didn't watch any trailers for it. I didn't realize the marketing compared to The Shining. What an awful comparison. Why would you set yourself up to fail like that? Because The Shining is one of the best horror movies of all time. But that sounds like an error of the marketing to me, not this movie. So it made everybody's anticipation of this movie so high. You know, I didn't see anything beforehand. I knew that this movie was a thing, but I didn't realize, you know, that it was being touted so highly. So my friend got me to watch it. He'd been begging me to watch it, and I finally watched it, and I really love the movie. Like I said, this movie is basically just a buildup, a giant buildup to chaos at the last 15 minutes, like a good mystery should be. All these little scenes, and I love the fact that this movie is kind of like a collection of scenes that's happening, and it's all just furthering that this woman's not okay. These kids aren't okay. Something's manipulating somebody. They need to get out of here. It's just all done so well. It keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time. There was never a point in this movie where I felt comfortable. I never felt safe watching this movie. And that was very entertaining for me. And that was definitely the goal of the filmmakers. Yeah, like Tyler said, the characters in this movie aren't written that realistically. But you know what? I don't really mind, because everything else in this movie is so well done, and it just nails the tone, the tension, the subtle hints that things aren't right. The pace of the movie drags along, but it's one of the few times when a slow-paced movie actually works in favor of the movie. And no, I haven't seen any movie like this. Any movie where the whole thing is just like a build-up to the last 15 minutes where you start to learn everything about what's happening, and everything just kind of explodes onto the screen. Like everything comes to a head, all the tension and all the mayhem comes to a head. And I just absolutely love this movie for that. It's not a movie really like anything I've seen before. If you're really into slow burn horror, then I mean, I got to recommend you check it out. I already reviewed this movie in 5 minute movie reviews, but that was kind of like a mini review for you guys. So you're welcome. Go watch that review on our channel. but seriously though, this movie is an exercise in slow burn horror. And holy cow, I mean, sure, the characters aren't that realistically written, but they're still compelling. They don't have to be written realistically to be compelling, at least to me. And I think everything else in this movie works. The mystery works. So I think the writing in this movie is the best part of it. Tyler said it's his least favorite part. It is my favorite part. So that's all I have to say.
Let me ask you, Luke.
Yeah, go ahead.
Could you not see the potential of this movie to be like a supernatural horror movie?
See, I love the fact that it wasn't like a supernatural horror movie. In fact, a lot of this movie isn't really horror. It's like a suspense, kind of suspense, like slow burn thriller kind of deal. So I like the fact that it wasn't just an outright supernatural movie. Like, it kind of leads you to believe a little bit, you know, throughout the movie, because I'm thinking, is it ghosts? Is it the cult? Is it the kids? Is what's happening? And the twist kind of hit me. And yeah, so I love the fact that there's not a supernatural element to the movie.
Yeah. And you see, my biggest problem with that was, you know, you have all this suspensefulness, right? My thing was, I felt like it built up to nothing, and I hated everything about the stupid twist it did. I would have much rather preferred there actually to have been like some sort of supernatural thing going on. You know, you mentioned in your argument, like, oh, like it's like the cult here, like is something going on with like religion or something like that. I found those kind of like little theories so much more interesting than what actually happened, and the outcome really, really hurt the movie for me.
Well, see, I really liked the twist, because it being the kids messing with her the whole time was in my head, like right near the beginning, when all the religious imagery and the daughter showing her the video and them clearly not liking her. So I kind of thought that's what it was. But when all the stuff goes missing, they're so like convincing with the way that they're also like, oh, what's happening? You know, the kind of facade they're putting on. And the twist after that point, you know, I was sure that it was something supernatural or something. So when I found out it wasn't, I love that twist. And it's dark and demented, but I think it's interesting that the kids went that far in the torture of this woman. Obviously, that's horrifying, but it's a praise to the movie, because it just makes you feel gross and icky. And I think that's the point. It's trying to unsettle you. So that's what I think.
Okay, then.
Well, good little fight there going on in the riding round. If you guys are both done, we're going to go into round two, directing round. We're going to go back to Luke.
Okay. So the writing obviously is my favorite part of the movie, but the directing is really close. Like Hereditary, you know, the main character in that movie, the mother, is a miniatures artist. And a lot of times there's like close-up shots of miniatures, and then it kind of, you know, there's cool transitions they do with it. It's really well done. That's one of the best parts of Hereditary, I think. But this movie does something kind of similar where out of nowhere, it will show you shots, slow-moving shots of areas of this lodge that they're at. And a lot of times it's the same shot used over and over. It's just something kind of small is just a little bit different. And maybe even though not that much is different in the shot, the further you get into this movie and the further that you are unsettled and not sure what's going on, just seeing those still, you know, not still frames, but slow moving frames with kind of not any music at all, just kind of just panning over the shots of the house and a shot of this, you know, kind of like this dollhouse thing that the daughter owns. But for a while it's really clever, and it shows like the dolls that you later find out are meant to represent the members of the family kind of laying over on the ground to imply that, you know, they were possibly killed. You know what I mean? It's done really well. Obviously it's influenced by Hereditary, but I just love the fact that, you know, they place these shots in here, the way the camera slowly lingers on anything. For the most part, there's not any wide panning shot, you know, giant wide shots. Whenever the woman is outside of the house in the snow, there are a couple of those. But for the most part, the camera work is basically functioning like the script does to keep you, you know, feeling claustrophobic and not safe, and to basically confuse you as the movie's going on, as you know, to what's happening. It's almost like it's almost like the camera work in this movie is a character in and of itself. And I know that's really cliche, probably, to say, a little pretentious sounding, but I don't think so. I think that the camera work in this movie is fabulous, and this movie wouldn't have been the same without it. You know, I just love how out of context some of these images that they're showing you would be. Kind of when you first see them early in the movie, you're like, okay, this is odd. What's going on? And the later you get into the movie, reusing some of those shots, maybe shooting them at kind of slightly a different angle, it just really unsettles you. And it's almost like you're looking for something to latch on to as the viewer to figure out what's happening, right? Because this movie is trying to confuse you on purpose. So, you know, so the camera work, when it keeps reusing some of those shots and it keeps, you know, shooting the same area of the house, it makes you look, okay, so that is something that's repeating. It keeps showing me the house. So maybe I need to latch onto that. You know, it gives you something to latch onto so you can kind of figure out in your head what's happening. And I just love how it's almost manipulating the audience into trying to feel safe. And I just think it's expertly done how not just the script, but also the camera work has the same effect on the viewer. And I just love the camera work in this movie. It's one of the best directed movies I've ever seen. Also, the cinematography in this movie, beautiful, beautiful. It looks beautiful. The outside of the house in the snow, absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's obviously meant to be horrifying, but it all looks great, you know, very dark kind of gray color palette, but it's so clear and it looks great. Right. So, and I love how just like we're supposed to be feeling claustrophobic and not safe. The camera work also kind of influences our feelings towards that direction. And I mean, it's great. Like it's one of the best directed movies I've ever seen before. So Tyler, you go ahead.
All right, so you say it's one of the best directed movies you've ever seen. I'm going to completely disagree. It was a hard, hard decision whether or not I thought the writing or the directing in this movie was worse. So this movie was both written and directed by the same people. And right. When that happens, you normally get movies that are very, very, they work well together in all the aspects in them, because, you know, it's one person's vision. And in this case, it's two persons' visions. It was Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala, who directed Good Night Mommy, that directed this one. And I've talked on this show about how I have had film classes in college. And on one of the episodes, I told a story about one of the students trying to redirect the Ezekiel scene from Pulp Fiction. And what an epic disaster that was. And this is what this movie feels like to me. It's like these two have watched Ari Aster's movies, fell really in love with his style, and tried to replicate it, but failed horribly in doing so. So the first 15 minutes, as mentioned previously, are the best parts of this movie, and it is the closest to actually feeling like an Aster movie. The cinematography in this segment is absolutely wonderful and is very reminiscent of his work. But as the movie goes on, they fail to understand what makes Ari Aster's movies so good. And to me, what makes Ari Aster's movie so good is that he understands the type of movie he is trying to make. Hereditary is classified as a horror film, but at its core, it's really like a family drama. And Midsommar is slightly more comedic, but still a horror movie. But Midsommar is a story about like a failed relationship and how grief affects people. These people, it felt like their messaging was conflicted with what they wanted to do. It's like they want to make a horror movie, but then they want to make like a suspense movie. They want to make like a supernatural horror. They want to make a psychological horror. And their direction really, really felt off. Like they couldn't decide what they were going to do. And that comes in part to their writing. And it just, the movie as a whole, because of that, felt like a mess to me. Like just a mess. Like, you know, as directors, especially as director writers, you're supposed to have like complete control of your movie. It's the movie that you want to make. But the problem is, it's like they didn't know what movie they wanted to make. Like, technically, it's fine. The cinematography is good. And, you know, the acting is done well. But there are just scenes there that just don't need to be there. And I'm going to sum up my directing argument by saying this. Watching this movie felt like watching a student short film trying to bring in elements from directors that they were fans of and failing at doing so. These guys are not new directors. They have directed successful movies in the past. So I was really disappointed that they didn't have their own sort of vision for it and they tried to copy someone else's. And because of that, I felt really, really let down by this movie's direction.
Tyler, are you really... Did you really just say that this movie feels like a student film that's trying to replicate?
That is those are the exact words that came out of my mouth, and I stand by them.
Tyler, you know I love you, right? You're one of my best friends. But that is one of the most disrespectful things that I've heard. This is I just don't understand. It's like your feelings towards the children in this movie and your expectations that you set for yourself is causing you to not just hate the script, but the direction also. When
well, maybe I just they don't understand. Maybe they should have wrote a good movie.
They did write a good movie. I just don't.
I disagree. They're
influenced by Ari Aster. They're not trying to copy him. They're emulating him, you know.
And the they're only failing real, at doing so.
I don't think so. And I think I just – that's crazy to me. But anyway, we need to move on so I can calm down.
whoa, Luke. Whoa.
I'm fine. Whoa. I can't believe that. That's crazy. But seriously, yeah, I'm good. That's just wild.
Take it easy.
I have seen student films with better direction than this movie.
Tyler,
it's like he's just trying to rile me up.
Tyler, you're going to rile him up.
Let's go, Luke. Let's go, Luke. Let's do it.
I'm not actually mad. I'm like in awe that you would say that. I'm like I'm just like, I can't believe that. Sure, they're influenced by him, but it's completely like their own film. I just don't understand. I don't know. We got to move on to the acting, I think.
All right. Let's go to the acting now. Tyler, it's your turn to start.
Okay.
Try not to get riled up too much this time.
Well, I won't, because I actually think, I think me and Luke are going to agree on this one. So, the acting in this movie is pretty fine. It's starring Riley Keough, Jada Martell, and they were fairly big names. I thought they both did really well, regardless of what I thought about Jada Martell's character. I thought he played him decently. I think anyone could have really played... I do think anyone could have played any of these roles. I don't think any of them particularly stood out, other than Alicia Silverstone, who was only in the movie for literally 15 minutes. And like I said at the start, I do think she gave the best performance of the movie in those short times. But a close second was the daughter, Leah McGuff, who is so young, and I had never seen her in anything else. But she was absolutely fantastic. There are, like I mentioned earlier, the scene where she's crying on her dad about her mom not going to go to heaven because she committed suicide was crushing. And I thought she was one of the standouts of this movie, one of the only parts that I actually enjoyed. And compared to the writing and direction, I don't really have any criticisms for the acting of this movie, so I'm just going to be brief and let Luke talk on it.
Okay, yeah. So, like Tyler was saying, I pretty much agreed with everything he just said. I think that, the daughter in this movie, it's an amazing performance. It's one of the best child performances that I've seen. And that's not me over-exaggerating or anything. I think she's that good. The scene that stood out to me was, you know, once the main character finds her therapy dog dead in the snow, frozen, which, again, stop killing dogs in movies. But anyway, she's sitting there crying. Or she's not. The daughter is just like bawling crying. Because at this point, I truly believe it's kind of left up to interpretation. But I don't think she was old enough to understand what she's doing. But I think that she was being manipulated by the brother into doing all these things to this.
Oh, woman, I right? agree. Yeah, totally agree.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So she's just going along because it's her big brother and she, you know, is listening to him. But once she realizes how bad they messed up when the dog died, she just starts bawling, crying and just profusely apologizing. And it's so well acted. And I've never seen this girl, you know, she's young. So it's like one of her first movies. But I mean, she's fantastic. I hope she has a very long, awesome career in Hollywood because she's great. But I think all the other roles are really great. Riley Keough, this is really until the end of the movie when crap hits the fan. I think that she gives a very kind of understated performance. There's no moments in her performance except near the end where she really stands out and has like a big acting scene, you know, like in a giant emotional moment. You know what I mean? But You know, this isn't that type of movie. You know, she is a woman who's slowly going insane, but trying to maintain her composure so she can connect with these kids. And I think she pulls that off really well, really believable. You can tell that she's tortured, but also like she's trying to put on a front, you know, to not freak out these kids and to try to connect with them. I think she's great. And I think Jaden Martell is really awesome. Again, like Tyler was saying, you know, anybody could have played these characters except for the daughter. She's great. But I think that these actors really pull it off. I was really impressed by all the acting. I think the acting, I love the writing and the directing so much that the acting, I guess by default, would be my least favorite part of the movie. But that's like saying that, you know, a 9 out of 10 is my least favorite. You know what I mean? I love the acting. So, you know, the acting just great in this movie. I will say that a guy who's just very flat and wooden and just kind of one note in his performance and his character's not given much to do except be a total scumbag. I really don't like the father in this movie. But the actor's name is Richard Armitage, who plays the dad. if any of our Tolkien fans out there, Lord of the Rings, Hobbit fans, you might recognize this actor from, he played Thorin Oakenshield in the Hobbit movies. It's funny because when he's not, you know, made to look like a dwarf, he looks totally different and, you know, unrecognizable just about. This is like the only other thing I've seen this guy in ever. And he was really good in the Hobbit movies. I really liked him in those movies. He is pretty bad, if I'm being honest with you. Thankfully, he doesn't have much screen time. So the fact that he doesn't, the fact that he seems like he's phoning it in really doesn't affect the proceedings at all because he's not in the movie much. But if I have to give a mark to the acting, it would have to be him. I think he's pretty one note and just bland and just not that good. Some of his line deliveries off. But other than him, and he's not in the movie much, so I know I'm kind of harping on that, but I got to be fair and talk about the thing I didn't like, the one thing in this movie that I didn't like. You know, spoiler alert, I really love this movie. Anybody could tell you that. But yeah, other than the father, all of the acting is absolutely fantastic. The daughter being the standout. I mean, this, she's incredible. So yeah, that's really all I have to say.
All right, boys. So, by this point in the debate, I have a winner. But we still have a closing argument to do. Because, you know, regardless if I have a winner or not, we stick to the script. So we're going to still do the closing argument. And Luke, you'll begin whenever you're ready.
All right. So, guys, it's been a... been a fun debate. I always love doing this with you guys. Really love doing it. It's a highlight of my day because most of my day consists of working. So I really love doing this. And I love talking about movies that I love. And The Lodge is a movie that I...
You can't butter up the moderator with your personal appeal to ethos.
Oh, come on, Tyler. I was buttering you up too, man. I was talking about both of you all. But anyway, thanks for calling me on that, Tyler. I appreciate it. But yeah, so I absolutely love this movie. Yes, it takes cues from Ari Aster's films, mainly Hereditary, but also has some influence from Midsommar. But I think that they make this movie their own. You know, they kind of, I don't think they copy him at all. I think they have his influence here, but they use it sparingly. It feels like a different movie than an Ari Aster movie, even though you can tell the influence is there. I think the characters, while not believably written per se, are just, I mean, very well acted and keep me invested the entire time. Whether their characters were that complex or anything or written realistically, they kept me invested the entire time. When a lot of this movie is very quiet and shots of things, almost sometimes repeated shots of things that are just meant to unsettle you. If really, guys, if you are looking for a movie that is incredibly well directed, where the directing goes right hand in hand with the acting into trying to make you unsettled and confused about what's going on and to keep you on the edge of your seat, which all directing should service the script and all acting should service the script and all of that stuff, you know, and vice versa and all that stuff. But this movie does it so well and very well directed, very well written. This entire movie, like I've said several times, is like a build-up to the last 15, 20, 25 minutes. And in that regard, I think it works really well. Once you actually find out the reveal of this big mystery, it subverted my expectations, and I really loved it. I really recommend this movie, guys. Like I said, it is on Hulu if anybody wants to check it out. I absolutely love this movie, and I thought Tyler would too, because we tend to like a lot of the same stuff. But alas, he did not. But yeah, guys, I love this movie. And yeah, that's really all I got to say.
You love this movie and you love me? And that's what you were going to say?
Yes. Yeah, I left that part out, but yes.
Yeah.
Also, I love Ray. Yeah.
All right. Tyler, go ahead, buddy.
I love you too, Ray.
Don't even.
I do. I do.
Tyler,
sincerely.
You're buttering up. Buttering up the moderator.
Yeah, sorry, man. What's up with that?
Yeah, as Luke just said, my biggest problem with this movie is that I expected to like it. I really thought it was going to be good, and then it just wasn't. It just did not meet my expectations. I thought the writing was awful. The characters made me angry. The directing made me angry. The entire movie just made me angry. It was a movie that had potential to be really, really good, and it just wasted all of it. It felt like they were just trying to be something that they were not. And it just really depresses me, because I thought the movie could have been great. And that's all I'll say.
All righty. The debate is over. The debate that we've been waiting 2 weeks to make happen is finally over. And boys, I will say it was a clean sweep. So anyone, you know, who thinks that we might rig it, who thinks that, they make one person win around that way, it's close every time. Nah, this is a clean sweep in the favor of the one and only Cineverse Luke 15.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Let's freaking go. Yes.
Tragedy.
Oh, my God.
Tragedy.
Yes.
I'll be honest, I had Tyler as a sweep until Luke buttered me up there in the end, and I changed it.
Whatever.
This is the greatest tragedy to ever occur in this country since Pearl Harbor.
Listen, Tyler, it's kind of fair because you absolutely wiped the floor with me on two debates, on Brightburn and the Hereditary Midsummer one. So it's only, it was time.
Do you like me go into details for each round as to why?
Yes, I would.
I would love to. I would love to hear you do that, Ray.
So, in the opening argument, I feel that, Luke brought up many points, whereas Tyler just, kind of talked how he was let down from the trailer as to the actual movie. So, I ended up giving it to Luke. There wasn't a lot there. In the writing round, Tyler, what was your main argument? Your main argument was, kind of the same thing, how you were let down by the movie. You almost had me in the writing round. I almost picked you. But in the end, I think Luke just, provided more points. Luke really got me when, you guys kind of went back and forth there in the end and, at each other. And Luke added, talked about how he liked how the twist was, not something like paranormal or something crazy, how it was just, normal. Yeah, so I ended up giving that one to Luke as well. And, I picked Luke in the directing round, but I didn't really pick a winners for the acting and the closing argument. If I had to pick for the acting, it would have been, Luke, because I feel like, you didn't really have anything bad to say about it, Tyler. I'm sure you can agree with me there.
That's true.
Luke, you kind of started talking about the guy that plays Thorin in The Hobbit. I was like, what is he doing? He doesn't even need to bring this up right now.
I know. So I had to talk about it. I had to be fair.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
It was a really good debate. I think I might actually end up checking it out, Lucas.
Dude, kinda you should. Highly recommend.
All right. Well, while I try to take my mind off this, we are going to go to sponsor break, and we will return with the story time. Okay, we are back. Ray, would you like to tell us a story this week?
Yeah, I'd love to do that, actually.
We need to tell Luke about some things.
Yeah, you can feel free to, join in at any time.
Absolutely.
If you'd like to add some details, because you are also here for this. Well, it's honestly kind of like probably best from your POV, Tyler, but I'll tell it from my POV.
See, guys, to give real quick, sorry to interrupt, Ray, but real quick to kind of give some background, you all know from our super awesome videos where we talked about our theater stories and stuff that we all used to work in a movie theater, except I'm the only one who used to. they, Tyler and Ray, both still work at the theater. I unfortunately do not. I do make more money now, but the hours can be horrific at times. But so I'm happy and always excited when they tell me new work stories that I haven't been a part of, because I like to hear stories fresh. You know what I mean? So yeah, Ray, go ahead. I'm excited.
If you come to the theater any weekend, you will see me and Tyler there. Any day of the weekend, we will be in the building. And, you know, this one weekend, Tyler often gets bored, but, you know, this weekend it got to a point to where he was so bored, you know, he's like, you know what, man, screw this. I'm going exploring.
That did happen. That happened.
So he just takes off. Man, I'm left behind the stand with Landon, who I'm sure wouldn't mind me using his name. We've talked about Landon multiple times during stories.
I think he watches all of our videos, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he normally does. But Tyler takes off on his adventure. And he, you know, As you guys probably don't know, but our movie theater is like inside of a mall. So there's like a bunch of like hallways and stuff. You know how malls are, like dark hallways, crazy hallways. But there's this hallway where we normally go down to take out garbage at night. But if you turn like a different direction, there's just this door. And Tyler, you know, found a way to open that door. So behind this door is another hallway, and there's like, you know, doors, exit doors, or whatever. And there's like just normal doors, nothing about them, no locks on them or anything. But at the end of the hallway, there's just all the doors are gray, you know, same color, not to mention. But at the end, there's just this red wooden door, like to contrast all the other doors, and it's got a huge padlock on it for whatever reason, like. And, you know, to this day, we still talk about it. Like, every weekend up, we're like, what do you think's behind that door? Like, that's just, it's the big kind of a mystery now. Like, what's behind the red door?
Yes, yeah, so if anyone knows what the back rooms are on the internet, it's like an internet creepypasta. Yeah, these hallways look exactly like the back rooms. And every time you're over there, it's just like an unsettling feeling. Like every time you take out the trash, it just feels wrong.
It does. Yeah.
Going down this hallway to on the other side felt even weirder. So to get to the end and reach just a bright red door with a padlock on it, it was very strange. Very unsettling. And honestly,
I'm not going to say we're not things behind the door.
What?
I'm not going to say what I think's behind the door.
You're not.
I'm not.
We both have our opinions on what's behind the door. Maybe you guys have opinions on what's on the door. Maybe you should leave in the comments below.
Yes, comment down below what is behind the red door, because I don't know what's behind there, and that sounds really freaky. Wow. Why is there a padlock?
Why is the door red?
Why
is the door red?
I mean, all the other doors are, Luke, how they're just like push, like you push them and they open.
Yeah.
This one's like, nah, this one's got a handle on it. It's like a wooden door, like it would be for like a bedroom or something.
I guarantee you anything that we can think that's back there is probably more exciting than what's actually back there.
Oh, most definitely.
Because like, we could open it and it'd just be like, or you all could open it unless I broke into the theater, but probably won't do that. But yeah, I mean, watch you open it and it'd just be like, I don't know, a cardboard cutout, one of the many cardboard cutouts that we have there.
It'd be like,
we could be, hey, you guys could be freaked out. Like every time I went upstairs when I worked there when I worked at the theater, everybody, we'd always, you know, Tyler and I have both been upstairs to the projection room to kind of fix stuff in the theater if something's getting messed up. And, I mean, holy cow, there's this giant – the movie Dark Shadows that came out that was like – I heard is not good. But it's got Johnny Depp and he's a vampire. there's this cardboard cutout of Johnny Depp as this vampire sitting up there. And like, I mean, the first 30 times that I went up there, I got scared every time. I like jumped every time. So watch it be like an even more horrifying cardboard cutout just behind the door, just sitting there. Very well could be.
I don't know, man. I get uneasy vibes from it. It scares me.
But with that, we're going to bring this episode to a close. We hope you have enjoyed. You can follow us on any of our social media at CineBrosP on Twitter, CineBros Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. If you're not watching on YouTube, we do have a YouTube channel at CineBros. Just look for our yellow reel icon. We upload this podcast, and Luke has his own series, 5-Minute Movie Reviews, that uploads on Mondays. Guys, anything else to say?
I've been making Among Us videos lately, if you might want to check those out. I can have Tyler put the link in the description, possibly, sure. If you're watching on YouTube.
Also, guys, like Tyler mentioned, I have my own review series exclusive to the Cine Bros YouTube channel. And get this, this is really exciting. I'm very excited about this. So I've ventured into TV reviews a little bit, kind of, and I need to do a part two to that boys video. That reminds me, it's been a while since I've done that. But anyway, with The Mandalorian coming out and it being, you know, the biggest show on television, right? I mean, basically, whenever it is premiering week to week, it's the biggest show on television. I don't care what you say. So I will be reviewing and breaking down and kind of analyzing, giving my thoughts on the first and second episodes of the season, right? And that video will be out this Monday. So be on the lookout for that. I'll be reviewing all of the episodes, probably two at a time, you know, like the first two and then the third and fourth one and so on. But I'm very excited for that series, talking about The Mandalorian. So make sure to check that out. But thank you, as always, for listening.
And honestly, Luke, if you give a bad review, we'll probably just have to kick you from Cine Bros.
Oh, my. Well, that's a lot of added pressure.
Yeah.
Yikes.
All right. Well, we will see you guys later. Bye.